If you listen to this podcast and follow what we do at Troutbitten, then you're a thoughtful angler, and you don't accept the status quo simply because that's how it's always been done. Squall of Fishing designs and creates fly fishing apparel with this same philosophy. Squalla was started by a group of lifelong fly anglers who spent their careers working for some of the biggest names in the outdoor industry, and they understood that essential fly fishing apparel like waders, jackets, sun gear, and insulation could simply be better. So now, Squalla makes gear for us, the like-minded few, serious anglers who don't take themselves too seriously. Check them out at squallafishing.com. Water is essential for life, but for Orvis, it's the blood of the brand. Orvis has been the leader in fly fishing since 1856. No other brand can match the explorative and innovative spirit they bring to the water today. Everything at Orvis is about inspiring and empowering adventure and wonder in nature. Rooted in the vitality of fly fishing, fueled by passion and curiosity for the outdoors, Orvis designs and develops products and experiences, providing the knowledge and expertise to enable more meaningful moments and connections in nature. With over a century and a half of experience in the field and on the water, Orvis seeks to ignite that passion in others. This is the Troutbitten Podcast.
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten?
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten?
Yeah, Troutbitten.
Troutbitten.
It's about trout.
Wild trout.
This is Troutbitten.
This is the Troutbitten Podcast, and thank you for tuning in. I'm Dominic Swantoski, the owner of Troutbitten and the author of Troutbitten.com. And there you will find endless stories, tips, tactics, and commentary among the 800 articles contained. So if you enjoy this podcast, trust me when I tell you, the website is at the heart of this whole Troutbitten project. My friends are here with me to talk about how we fight big trout. And that's our topic for episode 4 of season 3. This will be a fun one. So everyone loves hooking a big fish now and then. For some of us, it's the primary pursuit. Locating and catching big trout is the motivation to get out there, to explore new water and endlessly chase the largest fish in the river. But for many of us, we simply appreciate the almost random opportunity of fooling a bigger trout and feeling that extra power on the end of the line. However, whether hooking the next big trout happens with intention or almost as a happy accident, we'd all like to land that big fish. I want to see what a top-tier trout looks like in my streams, and I want to know what it ate if I had a couple flies on, and I want to spend a moment with it before I send it off to grow even bigger. Most of us don't chase trout for their fight. Pound for pound, a smallmouth bass beats out the fight in a trout almost every time. Instead, fooling a trout is the real draw. This is why we focus so much on the tactical game. Trout are just picky. That's why we like them. And they're challenging, especially the wild brown trout. And yet, when you hook one of the biggest fish in the river system, that fight forms a lasting memory. It's special. And it's always a better story if the fish ends up in the net. That's the goal, right? We want to land it. So when you finally get your next shot at a river beast, how do you keep it buttoned up? How do you gain control of the situation? And how do you finish the story with a catch instead of another tale about the one that got away? Some of this is intuitive, and you might make the right moves almost by chance. But so much of this is not instinctive either. It takes practice, trial and error, and just a lot of experience to fight big fish with ease. So there's no doubt that understanding a few fish fighting principles, having some strategies, and following through with a plan gives us a much better shot than just lifting, setting the hook on the fish of a lifetime, and hoping for the best. So I'm joined tonight by 5 of my favorite fishing friends. And I give you my word that each of these guys knows how to put the screws to a good fish and get it in the net quickly. I've seen it. Fighting big trout takes experience, and these guys have it. That's no joke. So here they are, Josh Darling, Bill Dell, Austin Dando, Trevor Smith, and Matt Grobe. Guys, are you ready for this one?
Absolutely.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, let's do it.
Tiddler's ready.
Still last, Matt. You might be mentioned last all season long.
It's because my name's Tiddler.
Okay. What's Tiddler again? The opposite of a big trout.
It's the opposite of a big trout. It's a very, very tiny trout. It's a tiddler.
Fair enough. Where'd that term come from?
On the banks of Western PA, Freestoner.
The tiddler. So, hey guys, we're going to talk about big trout. But let me ask, how big was the largest river trout that you've ever lost? Now, I know we're just guessing here, but seriously, you guys are all very good at estimating that length, even without putting it in the net. And you're all fairly honest fishermen, right? So how big, guys? What's the biggest trout you ever had on the line but didn't land it?
Who's going to go first?
I'll go. I lost a high 20s. You put it anywhere between 27 and 29 on a Freestoner out here and still think about it to this day. And I got enough good looks because I was in a boat, higher angle, you know, got to look at it fairly long in a, you know, and the water was clear and big kype, everything you'd want in a big, mature male brown trout.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't even know what happened. I mean, you fought it for a good 6-7 minutes and then it got downstream of me. And that's tough when you're in a boat.
In a boat, yeah, especially.
Back rowing, fish gets downstream of me, boom. I didn't even break off, it just got off.
Yeah. It's almost better not to break off because then you can't blame yourself for the knot. Hook just came out. That feels better, somehow better, right?
It does. It's fair.
Anybody else?
On one of all our local rivers here, I lost what was between, I would say, a 22. If I had to put the number, I'd say between 22 and 24 inch trout on a river that I haven't caught anything within 3 or 4 inches of that otherwise.
Where you're not expecting it.
Well, I was not expecting it. I was not proactive in my fight. Fish got downstream of me and it broke off. So I did have that to live with because it did break off at the knot. So I did get to see him. He rolled a couple times as I was trying to keep him from getting downstream of me. And it was a tough situation. I couldn't wade close to him. And so I was fighting him kind of across a number of different currents. The water was pretty heavy. I was a little bit out of control the whole time.
Yeah.
And then when he got downstream, it just was too much. I tried to run after him. I fell in and then
that's good.
Kind of scrambled and then broke off. It was a wild few minutes. And I was left feeling depressed and bewildered and wet.
No, I said that the better story, you have a better story if you land it. But in some ways, some of the most memorable stories, put it that way, are big fish that I've lost. And you guys, you know, we talk about those ones a lot too. My biggest one was, I'd say it was upper 20s too. If I ever caught anything close to 30, it was that one. Mm. And I was tight line nymphing really close to me. And I've written about this. It ate, it jumped. And, you know, when I set the hook, it jumped and it was up in the air in front of me, no more than 15 or 20 feet ahead of me. And when it landed, it actually splashed, made enough of a splash that water ended up on my sunglasses.
Oh, man.
Right? So I got a perfect look at it. And honestly, that day I just landed 2 whiskeys. And so I knew what a 20-inch trout looked like. And I had landed them a couple hours earlier, almost back-to-back for those fish. And so I know what a 20-inch fish looked like, and this was not anywhere close to 20. It was much bigger. I do believe still it was the best fish I ever had on. It hit the water. It went downstream fast. I felt like I did everything right. Really, I ran downstream with it. I kept that angle, which I'm sure we'll talk about here tonight. Kept what I thought was a perfect angle. It went downstream, I'm going to say, about 50 or 75 yards. And then it decided, okay, I'm going to turn upstream now. And it just turned, and it went right, just chugged back upstream right where it came from, which was unfortunately like a root wad. It went into that brush and right before it got to the brush, again, I kept that perfect angle. Right before it got to the brush, I was like, all right, I felt like I was pulling, but I'm like, I have to give it everything I have. Maybe I'm going to break off, but at least I'm going to try to stop that fish from going back into the roots. I did. I pulled. I didn't break the tippet, but I didn't pull hard enough because he did get into the roots. And that was it. And I swear, that's the biggest fish I ever had on. And that memory doesn't go away.
No.
That's the last time that I ever used 5X on that river. I'll never use 5X on that. I don't care how strong they end up making. Like 15 years from now, 5X is going to be like 10-pound test with the advancement of things. Yeah, that's why I lost.
There was a mid-20s brown trout on a Montana Spring Creek that I lost multiple times. And I kept going back early in the morning because the only way I could get this fish to eat was to get there before sunrise. and put a dry fly like underneath the bank practically and listen for it to slurp. Because if I got on the other side,
that's cool.
The thing wouldn't eat. Yeah, that, it was very tantalizing though. It worked a couple times and I lost it a couple times and I still wish to have landed that trout, but that's one that sticks out to me.
Do you need me to go catch it?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe not.
Austin's Creek.
How long ago was that, Austin?
That's probably 5 years ago.
All right. So do you think if you could hook him tomorrow, I understand he's probably gone by now, but if you could hook that fish tomorrow, do you think you could land it? Like, do you think like better skills or better understanding of how to land bigger trout now?
Maybe. I think the setup was just so bad that it made everything out from the start to be a pretty bad situation to land a large trout.
Yeah.
I like to think maybe I could.
Yeah, sure.
Got away without sharing. That's nice.
What's that?
I said I got away without sharing. That's nice.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do you want to?
No.
You want to?
No, no, go ahead.
Does Josh releasing my big trout count as losing one or no?
Someday.
It kind of counts for both.
Should I poke at you a little bit there,
Josh? We could,
Josh,
bring it back up. We should probably bring it up at least once per season.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Just that's a really dirty thing to do to a friend. Yep. You can't tell me it wasn't intentional either. All right, so I mentioned in the intro that some of us hook big trout on purpose, and for others it's a happy accident. I know we all go through phases, and we've talked about that before. I've always said that the best way to catch a big trout is to catch a bunch of trout, and one of them will be big. That's still kind of where I am right now. Personally, I enjoy most trying to refine tactics and fool any size fish with my days on the water. But where are you guys right now? How do you encounter big trout, on purpose or by accident?
I think I've been in a really similar spot to you, Dom, for the past 6 months. Mm-hmm. In that I'm looking for numbers and I just want to enjoy it out there and I want to try to fool them. And if I get into something good, that's great. But that is about to switch here in about 1 month.
Because night fishing season.
Night fishing season.
Yeah, I got
free hours.
I will say, Matt, you remember when I started night fishing so long ago? And at first, I was just night fishing to catch a fish or two. I really wasn't trying to catch big fish. And I remember you saying, well, night fishing is about catching big fish. And I was like, well, for me, I just want to learn something about the game. And then eventually, it has become about catching big fish. That's my goal out there. And that's why I'll go to some of the waters that I do. And I don't get as many night days in because I need just more time out there, more travel time and things like that. Now, night fishing is synonymous with hopefully catching big fish. I'm disappointed if I don't get a bigger trout at night.
Yeah, agreed. I think that happened faster for me than it did for you. I didn't really have that stretch of night fishing where I was looking for small trout. Mm-hmm.
I think I waffle a little bit like Josh mentioned he does. Like, it depends on where I'm fishing, the time of year I'm fishing, how many times I've been out lately. I certainly have never been in a stretch where all I want to catch is big trout, but I certainly don't turn down opportunities to target big trout if I'm either on the right river, in the right water, in the right conditions. And so I think for me, it's a little bit more fluid. And I can't see myself ever dedicating myself solely to the pursuit of big trout because I just don't imagine that I have the time or opportunity to do that without limiting kind of my opportunities. So I guess I'm just an opportunist to some extent.
Yeah, there you go. But the neat thing is too that it's always there. Like, that pursuit is always there. If you get bored with fishing the way you do, you might just start targeting the big ones. Matt, you kind of go after big ones on purpose, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think I go back and forth between just fishing for numbers. And I think a lot of 18 to 21 inch fish can be, had just doing that, right? You can catch a lot of good sized fish just going out for the day and fishing. But there's other, I truly believe if you want to focus on catching 23 inch plus wild freestone fish,
right,
there needs to be some sort of devotion to target those. And whether that's, searching for different waterways that may or may not have them, that's a thing all in itself, right?
Sure.
Exploring water that could potentially have them. Yeah. And then there's the, you were on a certain section of river. I moved a big mature 23 plus inch fish on a streamer. And I'm going back to that. We all know brown trout like to reside in similar holes year after year. And so you take note and then you go target that. Like the next drift, I'm not, you know, I might skip all the water, stop, pull the boat over and target that specific run, and really work it until I can get a big fish. But I'm not catching numbers. I'm out there for one specific reason, and I think at times that pays off.
Yeah, yeah. Doing it with intention. You got to be willing to strike out, though, too. You and I talked about that on our season one podcast. We had a good discussion, I think, on bigger fish, you know, the tactics that you'll use. And like you said, you're looking for certain waterways.
Absolutely. And we talked about, I mean, do you really see, and we're talking freestone, right? I clarified that.
Right.
We all have river systems that might be influenced artificially or, you know, even these big tailwaters down south, right? That may have wild trout. That's fine, but they also get a million stocked fish could help their diet. That might help their diet to get that big.
Fish are all over streamers,
right? So, to do a freestoner, that's to me the top of the game. There is people roping in pure freestone 2-footers, and it's not easy. And you don't see it.
No lake often. Run influence either necessarily.
Right,
right. It's a big deal. Yep.
I go through phases where I won't necessarily hunt a big fish, but if I'm fishing a river and I know there's a spot that I'm prone, that I've caught some better fish, I'll go and fish and catch my numbers. And okay, I've caught 15 fish today. And now let me go and cherry pick a couple spots that I've seen big fish in and see if I can get a better one, like the end of the day, so to speak.
Hey, well, last week we were talking about the sustainability of catch and release. And I said, even if you do have one of those days where you're catching 50 fish, you start to go, well, I figured that out, you know, for today. How else can I catch them? And that's something I'll do, like you're saying, Bill. If I'm getting into really good numbers, I go, all right, let me see if I can find a big one. Today would be one of those days where I'm going to go to places, like you said, where you've had success, certain spots, and maybe certain tactics, yeah.
So here's a question. On days that you've caught high numbers, do you ever catch a big fish?
Oh, yeah.
So for me, it seems like the days that I struggle and I'm catching, you know, I'm busting my butt all day and I catch 8 fish, but those are the days that somehow it seems like I catch that bigger fish, where the days that I'm, you know, maybe catching 50 fish, I'm catching the cookie cutters that are 12 to 15.
Yeah. I guess it depends on where I am, but no, I certainly have had days. That's what I said earlier. If I catch a bunch of fish, I feel like one or two of them are pretty big.
I think that some windows to provoke Bill, I think some situations will say like the sucker spawn hatch, you know, where you get all the fish in the system eating, and those windows are small. I mean, there's no doubt that it's not like that all year, but like salmon fly time out here. Same thing, like every fish in the river system's super stoked to be looking up at those big cheeseburgers, and you'll have the biggest fish in the system eating, and you'll have the tiddlers in the system eating, and so there is, all the stars can align. It's not often.
That's good stuff.
Tactical Fly Fisher was started in 2015. By Fly Fishing Team USA angler Devin Olson, with a mission to bring American anglers the techniques and gear that dominate the international competitive fly fishing scene. While you may have no desire to compete, you can still benefit from the same strategies which competitive anglers use to make them more successful on the water. Whether you want to buy your nymphing rod, a stillwater fly line, or just some hooks and beads to fill your fly box, we've got you covered. And our teaching materials will help you learn how to use whatever products fill up your cart. Head on over to tacticalflyfisher.com and use the code TFF10 to get 10% off flies, fly tying supplies, or terminal tackle.
Water is essential for life, but for Orvis, it's the blood of the brand. Orvis has been the leader in fly fishing since 1856. No other brand can match the explorative and innovative spirit they bring to the water today. Everything at Orvis is about inspiring and empowering adventure and wonder in nature. Rooted in the vitality of fly fishing, fueled by passion and curiosity for the outdoors, Orvis designs and develops products and experiences, providing the knowledge and expertise to enable more meaningful moments and connections in nature. With over a century and a half of experience in the field and on the water, Orvis seeks to ignite that passion in others. Good stuff, guys. Hey, let's jump into our topic, how to fight bigger trout. I think we already kind of identified big or bigger, right? What are we talking about here? Upper teens and beyond?
18 plus.
I like that. So let's say those are big, but like we can practice on the smaller ones too, right? But let me mention this. There's a category of articles on Troutbitten titled Fighting Fish. You can find that in the menu or through the search page. It's an ongoing series with about 10 or 11 articles published so far. And if you throw in the big fish category too, there's seriously a book's worth of material on Troutbitten available for you to read and dig into. And all of that deals directly with the strategies we'll talk about here tonight. So check that out as sort of a companion resource to this podcast. And just like last week, we will only scratch the surface of this topic tonight. And that's all right, because it sets up some future episodes where I'm sure we'll dive into more details for some of the best tips that we'll mention here. So let me kick this off with one of what I see as the guiding principles for landing big trout. Fighting fish fast. Fight them fast. For me, almost everything else that I do is based on this, trying to get the fish in as quickly as possible. Do you guys see it that way too, or something else?
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Eliminate the chances of them getting off.
Right.
Yeah, I think the longer you keep a fish on, the more variables exist. And I think some of those bigger trout know certain areas that they can move that are going to put you in a difficult position.
Mm-hmm.
I think I agree with that. I also think sometimes it depends on what water you're in. So if you hook a trout in a really fast riffle, you should give yourself a little bit of time to fight that fish and play that fish under the right temperatures and all that fun stuff. Whereas if you're in a pool, you got a little more leverage there. I mean, and you can probably maneuver that fish a little better. And, you know, species too, I think.
Yeah.
Rainbows, you know, this weekend I had two rainbows rip me into my backing.
No kidding.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, they just fight. I mean, they're just this time of year, spring, they're angry and they tear line off your reel.
I like that.
And so that's another, just something to, that influences how quickly you can land the fish. But yes, the goal was always to get that fish in as quick as possible. You just have to understand your surroundings and the water, because I see people horse the fish in a little too much and then they snap their lines off. Right. So it's that fine, happy medium awareness type stuff.
Yeah. As fast as possible, but you can't overdo it either. And you got to read the situation. I'm surprised that you had any fish really go into your backing, because you know how to fight fish.
Yeah. That's incredible.
But I'm sure that it had to happen, or else you wouldn't have let it happen.
Yeah. And it's, you're talking 2-3 pound trout, right?
Against the current, probably. Ripping downstream.
Against a fast current. And when they hit and they want to go, they're programmed different than...
Big river.
River. They fight a little different than brown trout. Rainbow trout. Wild rainbow trout really can fight.
And so all of that stuff matters. The areas that we're fishing here, they don't even have that much room to run. And like you say, especially browns, they're going for cover. And where's cover? It's at the next bend, which is what?
Yeah.
You know, 50 yards up. And so we don't get those, you know, long runs that go into our backing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Matt, do you think, I feel like the, like wild rainbows, like 17 to 18, once they get a lot bigger, I've never had experiences where they take the big runs. I feel like those, like, I don't know, 17 to 19, 17 to 18 rainbows just want to go.
Yeah, they want to take off. And I think certain times a year, there's no better time than April out here, because the water temperatures are ideal and those fish have just gone out, you know, just lived through a long winter, and they are very energetic and they want to rip. I mean, they might not have been caught for a long time, and they tell you when you hook them, and it's fun.
Do you think that's your favorite thing about rainbow trout?
Yeah, it is. I mean, the aerial dynamics of the fish. Mm-hmm. And like I said, this was Saturday I went out, and it had been a while since I'd gone to that creek and or that stream. And Austin, I sent you a picture where I was at, and it was like, boom. Yeah. I mean, first one hits. Zzz, I mean, just like that line ripping off the reel.
That's cool. That's why you don't want a silent drag either.
Right.
Yeah. Any, true. Any,
it gets your heart racing, man.
I love it. Yeah. I want to hear a clicker or a zing, something. That's cool. Cause you know, we don't have wild rainbows here. I mean, that's really what we're missing. And so when we catch a rainbow, we all go, yeah, come on. Another stock, you know, rainbow among
Let's
our
get
wild
this
browns.
Over with.
Get out. That's right. Get this over with. We have sort of derogatory names for our rainbow trout here. Yes. So we fight them fast, right? What else? What else?
We all mentioned, as we were telling, or everybody who mentioned losing a fish pretty much said they got below us.
Oh, right. Downstream. Yeah.
It's a huge factor. And if you ever go on, if any of you listening want to go on YouTube and look up huge brown trout, usually you're going to see somebody who got lucky. And usually you're going to see somebody who hooked into a big fish. They start hooping and hollering. They set their feet and they just hold on for dear life as they wait for that fish to, well, obviously in those cases, they probably caught them, but generally the fish just takes advantage of them and outsmarts them and gets below them. And then
and they still get lucky.
I'm shocked at how, and to your point, Josh, I'm shocked at how many videos from even, you know, kind of popular fly fishing companies or YouTubers display what I would consider kind of amateur big fish fighting technique.
Yeah.
And I get that.
That's fair.
There are different conditions in different rivers that don't allow you to do the kind of stuff that maybe we're ideally going to do with a bigger trout. But so often guys' feet are just rooted to the same spot and they're just basically letting the trout make the moves and they're having to react to it.
Yeah. So the point is get below them and let the current work for you. So guys, are there intricacies to that? But beyond just get below them.
Yeah, I want to do everything I can to keep the trout upstream of me. And like you said, I'm going to move. As soon as I have a big fish on, I'm thinking, okay, how can I get to shallower water? How can I maybe get up on the bank? Whatever I can do to get that angle. Like I said, with that biggest trout I ever had on, I felt like I had a good angle on him the whole time. What I mean by that, he was mostly across, but slightly upstream of me. I'd have been much happier if he was even more upstream of me, but I was doing all right. If you can keep the trout across from you, at least, but more upstream, the better, because then he's fighting not just you, but also the current and all of that. You just have much more control of the situation. With the trout downstream of you, you have very little control over the situation, and the trout is fighting, well, the current is working for the trout, you know. That makes sense. Bill?
So you wrote an article about, so when the trout does get below you, don't pull hard, because if you pull hard, that fish is going to want to run further downstream. Yeah.
They go away from the pool.
Right. And so just kind of hold pressure, but don't let it go slack, but just a little bit of tension in there. And most times, unless it's a rainbow, it'll work its way back up to you.
Does that work for you, Bill?
I've tried it a couple times, and I started testing it out on like smaller fish, and then I hooked one of my better fish this year and did that same thing, and you know, didn't put a lot of pressure on it. Eventually it came back up, and then I was able to position myself downstream from it, and then once I got downstream from it, put side pressure on it, and then put the screws to it and got close, lift, net.
Nice.
Yay.
Yeah. Because a lot of bigger trout get downstream of us kind of accidentally, or there's nothing we could do to stop them from going downstream. And once it's there, like, what are we going to do? And maybe we can't move our feet enough, you know, to switch positions with it and get the fish in that best spot. So you have to have some tricks for getting it back upstream. Anything else?
Isn't that kind of cool? I mean, it just shows us that they know the currents better than we do.
Yeah, good call.
And obviously they're living in it. And so I just think it's cool that they know, well, this thing's pulling on me, get downstream of it, and I'm going to have all this force aiding me.
Yeah, I feel like they instinctively go away from that pressure. Like we were saying, the harder, if you pull real hard, I feel like they want to go the other way. Plus, they're going to run with the current.
Right, yeah, they preferentiate the current.
Right. Any trout in, I suppose most fish, they're in fear and want to run away, are going to use the current to get away quicker, you know, and that just makes sense. The other thing I do a lot is try to keep the trout out of that surface current. You know, I definitely don't want them way up to the top. Yeah. If you say split the current into thirds, I don't want to be at the top. I'll put them in the middle, but if I can get them in the lower current, or let's say lower middle. Of course, I don't want them tangling in rocks and roots and logs and stuff down there.
Good point.
But let's say I'm aiming, to get them out of that top third. It seems like they panic when they're in that top third. And we acknowledge that the topwater is going the fastest anyway.
Right.
But I think more than anything, they just kind of panic when they're up top. Let them get back down, at least into the middle third, and then kind of cooperate with the trout. Try to let them come back upstream. I use a real low rod position to help that happen. Like you were saying, Trevor, you see a lot of videos with people hook a big fish, rod goes sky high, and they're
he's a jumper.
And they're just thrashing around on the surface, right?
He's a jumper.
Rolling, thrashing.
Look at him jump.
Splashing.
Wow, yeah. What a jumper.
Yeah. So much can go wrong at the surface.
If you hold that side pressure, and if you're in a bigger river,
yeah,
and you're near the bank, usually that bank has a slower current. If you can coax that fish more,
yeah,
like you're saying, side pressure, coax it gently into the calmer water, then you have a better chance also of kind of getting around and that fish coming back up to you.
I like that a lot too, because that calmer water is another place where maybe they won't freak out as much. Austin, are you going to say something?
I was thinking about fighting fish in different current speeds like we've been talking about just now. And with the side pressure going off what Bill mentioned, I like to think about controlling the fish's head and the direction that the fish's head is facing.
Nice. That's important.
If I put side pressure on a fish and it turns it perpendicular to the current, and all that current hits the fat sides of this big wild rainbow trout or brown trout, I've lost control. And that thing splits on me, heads downstream, and I'm out of the advantage again. So I like to kind of use that side pressure in a way that I can direct its head to almost angle it like diagonally across out of the fast stuff into the slower stuff, and then gradually bring it back to myself.
That's an excellent tip.
It's a good point.
Good stuff. Yeah.
I love that idea of just knowing where its head is and thinking about it. As far as the angles go, the fish has to follow its head, right? I mean,
yeah, definitely.
And we do have some quite a bit of control over that head,
right?
And until they get up into until they're really, really big, and then you can't do anything about it. Sorry, go ahead, Matt.
No, it's okay. Two things. So, just on the fighting piece, as soon as I know I have a big fish on, my immediate natural reaction is just to look for obstacles, and you can guide that fish. If how many times have we hooked fish in front of root wads or snags? And if you can really quickly, before, I feel like there's like a 4 to 5 second grace period before that fish really knows what's going on, and you can guide that fish around that obstacle somehow to do your fighting away from it. That's helped me a few times, and it's handcuffed me a few times, right? Cause I didn't react quickly. So that's that. And then we're talking fighting big fish, and Dom, you brought up a good point earlier that I'll elaborate on, is we tend to go towards the bank in shallow water. And during that process, right, I would say if the fish gets downstream of us, we lose fish. But the second biggest fail, in my opinion, that I see people do, or I have happen, and it's not actually fighting the fish. Well, it is kind of fighting the fish, but it's landing the fish. And so that's probably just as, how many times do you have anglers reach down to try to net a big fish and lose it at the net? And there's, me, there's a main reason that happens. And Dom, you said it.
Yep.
If you go too shallow, you can't scoop. Mm. You can't scoop effectively. Mm-hmm. And if you stay too deep, you can't scoop too deep. So there's in the back of everybody's head, you should be looking for that sweet spot that you can play the fish to, right? And then it's just, you slide that net right under that fish and voila, right? You land the fish.
Nice.
I think it's knee deep. What do you got?
That's a good, I'd say that, knee deep.
And also, Matt, you said about you're netting it above you.
There you go.
I've tried to net a fish below me.
Oh, yeah.
And you miss, and you're way out of position following that net, versus if you're netting the fish and it's coming, so you're lifting at the end to get that fish's head up, you have way better success rate of the fish above you. You lift its head up and it's kind of in like a free fall state in the water, and you scoop underneath it. Your success rate is way better than just willy-nilly kind of reaching with one arm and pushing the other arm back to get the rod up.
The other thing is, if they're below you, then their head's going to be facing towards you, which means they're going to see the net, and trout get an extra burst of energy very quickly when they see the net a lot of times. If they're above you, or if they're across from you and you lift that head, then you're going to be able to slide that net under them without them actually seeing the net coming towards them. Generally, what I mean is generally if they're below you, you're pulling them up towards you. And by the time you get them into that zone of water where you can scoop them up easily, their head is facing towards you.
That's a great point. I can envision, I mean, I think we all can envision, right? Us messing up fighting a fish, big whiskey.
Yeah.
And it's downstream of you in too much shallow water. And you're like struggling on your knees to scoop this fish up. And the last vision you have is this fish flopping off of rocks. You have blood coming out of your knees and the fish gets away.
that's not a good vision.
It's not, terrible. But we have all had it, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Epic fail.
I think an interesting aspect to the fighting fish fast like we're doing and fighting these bigger fish, to me, I feel like because of this, we're fighting and we're netting. I'm netting a pretty fresh fish. Like when I watch some videos of people fighting big fish, they're like, I mean, you guys see on YouTube and Facebook guys saying, oh, that fight took me 10 minutes, almost as if it's a badge of honor, right? Well, they're pulling in a half-dead fish.
Yeah.
And when we're fighting fish for 30 seconds, less sometimes, maybe a minute at most, you're netting a fresh fish. And to me, like every single fight with a fish, each fish has a personality and there is some commonality to how we fight them. But for me, I love to net them like at the moment that I turn them, I turn that fish. And for me, every fight with a big fish has a moment in that first minute where you get an opportunity. And one of the topics we'll talk about is like you pull or the fish pulls, you never let them rest. But as you're kind of pulling and testing each other back and forth a little bit, they're almost always in your position, like Grobe, you were saying, like you're mapping out your route to get behind that fish. And you get in position, you get behind that fish, and then you get this slight give, or like that trout moves his head or kind of gives his position up just slightly. And you just take full advantage of that moment and you flip that fish and he comes up and you net him. And you're netting a fresh fish from behind, like Josh, you were saying, you're not doing it from the front. But like, I just feel like it's all about that moment. There's always that moment in the first 30 seconds or so that you have that opportunity.
And it might happen later in the fight too. And whatever, in the closing portion of the fight.
Yeah.
And when you get that, I liked what you said about the fish being off balance. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it actually loses its balance, but we get the description. The position changes and all of a sudden you do have that advantage. And you get that moment. And then what you said there, you take full advantage of that. And you can seal the deal.
You press your advantage, and that's how you land that fish in that first minute or so.
So I wrote an article. The last article I wrote on this fish fighting tactics was about the last 10 feet. And we definitely addressed a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
Get them upstream, which is why I like to fight them upstream in the first place. So I have them upstream of me. And Matt, you were mentioning this. You know, he's upstream of me. I have him in the right type of water, hopefully knee deep, something like that. And then Josh, you were talking about the head. Well, you know, once its head is up, the way I think of it is when a trout's head is above the water, it can't swim. The trout has to follow its head. And if you dip the rod and let the head back under the water, you'll see it. Zoop, it can go away, whether it sees the net or sees us. If it has energy left, which it probably does, like Trevor says, the way we're fighting fish, it's going to bolt if you put its head back down accidentally. Once I get its head up, I don't care if it's what angle I'm at, once I get its head up, I'm going to keep it up.
It's a good point.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to haul ass to get to that and net that fish if it isn't right at arm's reach.
Right. Yeah. And because once its head's up, I'm going to kind of say, I don't care how big it is. You can bring it across the surface of the water. But you understand what I'm saying. Its head is up. You have the advantage. Don't lose it. Don't let the head get back underneath. And then, you slide the net right under the fish, because now the current, we've acknowledged that the fish is upstream of us. You get the head up. The current pushes the fish right back into your net. You don't even have to reach with the net. And we said that we see it done so often, really the wrong way. I'm going to say the wrong way. It's certainly not the best way. Almost the opposite of everything we're talking about. And you know, that's all right. Because, I mean, we all did it the wrong way for a long time. I know I certainly did. But you learn these things over time, and you eventually can land the biggest fish that you ever have on instead of losing it and going, oh, no. But it takes how many losses to learn these things? But these things matter.
Absolutely.
This is how you land them.
Precision Fly and Tackle is a family-owned business with a passion for the outdoors and a sense of adventure. They are anglers who enjoy every moment spent on the water with family and friends. Precision Fly and Tackle carries the widest selection of Euro rods, reels, lines, leaders, flies, and accessories. From the beginner to the advanced angler, Precision Fly and Tackle can outfit every angler, no matter the budget. Visit them online at precisionflyandtackle.com. Then use code TROUTBITTEN10, that's the number 10, for 10% off your order. Gear up with Precision Fly and Tackle for your next adventure. This episode is supported by Freestone Coffee. You'll love sipping on it, guaranteed. Freestone Coffee is wildly delicious and dedicated to the sport of fly fishing. All Freestone Coffee is fresh roasted for your order, and 5% of proceeds go back to conserving the streams we love to fish. Freestone is just getting started, and they love your support. Head over to freestonecoffee.com and use code TROUTBITTEN for 15% off your order. That's code TROUTBITTEN for 15% off your Freestone Coffee order. Love it or your money back.
Do you have something, Bill?
Matt, you talked about the root ball and just structure. And so if I hook a fish and I have the ability to wade, like I'm going to coax that fish away from it and I'm going to position me between the fish and the structure so that if the fish does go for that structure, I'm almost playing defense and trying to keep that fish out of the structure.
Nice. Sure. Nice. So guys, yeah. How does the dynamic change when we're on a trout bitten outing and I'm fishing with Dom in my favorite honey hole and your buddy needs to come in and land the fish because you scream, "Hey, Dom, I got a big one." and you come down. Does the dynamic change on how to fight them at all for you guys?
I don't want somebody netting my fish.
Oh, same here. I'm like, stay away. I got it. I don't trust anybody else. And then really it changes, like Matt's saying, it does change the dynamic of what I'm working toward, what I'm trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And even I've guided enough now to know where I want to be and how I want my angler, you know, and really I'm just trying to stand pretty close next to them. I don't want to be downstream of them. And now they're doing all the things we said that are wrong, sure. But then here I'm going to net your fish anyway. It doesn't teach the right things in the first place. And you got a much worst chance of it not popping off the hook.
Netting someone else's fish, if someone else is going to net my fish, I feel like more often than not, it's like last resort.
Do you have kind of an experience with this, Austin? Has something bad happened to you in the past?
I don't want to bring up bad feelings, but yeah. No, Trevor actually landed the fish. Trevor did a fine job. Josh let it go. That was Josh. But anyhow, more or less what I'm saying is if I'm fighting a fish and like something severely goes wrong and my buddy's downstream and it's a dire situation, I might call out for help.
Yeah.
But if it's a normal situation, even if it's a large trout and I feel like, you know, I got my stuff together, I'm not going to ask for help.
Right.
I don't want it, just like you.
I netted and we took photos of the two nice fish that we caught on your bachelor party. Yeah. I want to note that.
That's true.
I didn't release
I don't even remember if that's true, but I'm going to believe you.
I do think it's kind of fun to net each other's fish, you know?
Yeah.
And if we do have all these kind of principles in our head, it just kind of happens naturally. Like, oh, I'll stand over here. Oh, there, you're swinging it right toward me. Oh, the head's up. Ooh. Oh, I got it.
Well, that's a good point. Like, people are going to do this, and so we can address how to do it. The point is, the person netting should also be below the fish and somewhat close.
Yeah, yeah.
What it should be is it should be that second person is just being an extension of the first person. Like, you should add another 5 feet or so
for sure.
to that, totally agree. You know, to the person fighting the arm. Fighting
and try,
the
just to land it even that much faster.
Try not look at the fish. Try not to look at the fish and try not to make eye contact with the guy.
Don't make eye contact.
Because your heart will start fluttering as much as the guy fighting the fish when you realize you can ruin his whole day.
I've been there. I've ruined days.
Right.
But you gotta have the communication though. Like if the person is fighting the fish.
Right.
Like, so I went through this with a client earlier in the year. And so client hooks a big fish, fish gets below him, and we're kind of like communicating, like, where's the fish? Where's the fish?
Yeah.
And then I'm like, okay, raises the head, and then I scoop.
Yeah.
And so if he doesn't raise the rod at the same point when I'm ready to net the fish,
right,
bad things happen.
Yeah.
And one thing I've always tried to keep an eye on, because it's dinged me a couple times, is see if the fish is hooked on the tag fly or the bottom fly.
Sure.
Because if the fish is hooked on the bottom fly and you scoop the net and you catch the tag fly and it snaps the fish off, you're not happy and your friend's definitely not happy.
Yeah.
I was just going to say one other thing to keep in mind, and Dom writes about all this pretty extensively on the website, but just if you're new to the game in the sense of fighting big fish, because not every stream has those big fish, just you should be mindful of the tippet size, because you have a lot of folks out there now are using, you know, the 5X and the 6X tippet, and that's not going to help you. I mean, land a fish quickly when you don't have much experience.
Will 7X help?
Fighting those fish. 7X definitely won't help.
Oh, okay.
And so,
is 8 better?
I like to tell folks that, you know, 4X tippet, I mean, that's a good starting point. That gives you the backbone to maneuver some of these big fish in and out of the holes and properly fight them. And, you know, you don't necessarily need to try to go straight from 5X to catching and landing and fighting big fish.
For sure.
I definitely agree. Having confidence in your tippet strength or the rod that you have in your hand, knowing how it performs, Dom, you're right, you know the strength of your tools.
Right.
You know, if you can take advantage of the fish to the maximum by knowing what your gear is capable of, you're going to be even more in a place to land those fish quickly and consistently. I learned that the best fishing some of those big tailwaters out in Montana, and literally you couldn't wade 10 feet off the bank before you're over your chest. And the only way to get them in right away was just put the heat on them. And I learned pretty fast how strong my tools were.
Good stuff. Yeah.
I think with these long, kind of supple and low weight nymphing rods too, a lot of them are built with butts that can really put a lot of pressure on a fish if you can get the fight down to the butt. That's another place that I think people need to work on, the angle at which they hold their rod and fight that fish and apply side pressure, because a lot of times they're fighting the fish in the top half of the rod and not even utilizing the power they have.
That's what side pressure is, right? And that's good you brought that up. Tell us more about that, Trevor.
Yeah, I mean, all you have to do is, you know, the exercise that you've talked about, Dom, hook your fly into a log and kind of apply pressure on it in different angles and watch your rod as you do it.
That'll teach you.
Exactly. And it'll teach you how your rod flexes under different angles of pressure. And under the proper angle and to the side, we're talking maybe 10 degrees off the water, 15 degrees off the water.
Mm-hmm.
You can apply pressure on that fish such that you're really getting deep rod flex down into the butt section. And when you do that, you're really fighting that fish with a whole lot more pressure than the tip of the rod would be able to withstand otherwise. And a lot of people fighting fish, kind of that classic over the head pose, are really fighting fish with the top half of their rod, you know, like I said. And one, it's going to pull the fish up to the surface. And two, you're utilizing the weakest section of the rod.
Right on. Yep.
I'll say the other thing is close the distance. When you hook the fish, get as close to it as you can immediately, because then the fish, you know, starts to barrel roll. You're right there. You can net it. Or, you know, when you're closer, when that fish messes up, if you hook the fish, you stand there and you admire how big it is, the fish is going to take advantage of you.
Right. The other way they take advantage of you is they'll kind of rope you into thinking like, oh, he's just hunkering down. I guess I can't do anything about it. I think of it this way. Either I'm pulling, somebody said this earlier, either I'm pulling on the fish or the fish is pulling the other way. It's me or him. Mm-hmm. For me, there's no rest. I'm not going to give them any rest. We're trying to get them in fast, right? That's what the guiding principle is for all of these other tips and strategies. Either he's pulling or I am. As soon as he's done, it's my turn. You know, we'll go back and forth. And if he wants to pull, great. I mean, okay, I'll let him go. Not necessarily any more than I have to, right? And there it goes back to knowing the strength of my tools. And I really have already put the hook in a streamside log and really pulled. I know the strength of my 4X whatever tippet. I do know the flex of my rod. I use the same rod almost every day. I know it. Like I know how much pressure it'll take. So I'm going to pull hard. But if he wants to pull harder and enough that it would break my tippet, I'm going to let him pull. And that's what you were saying, Matt, at the beginning of our conversation. You have these rainbows lately that are just pulling. So you're like, well, I got to let them go. And eventually what, they kind of turn around for you?
I think eventually you tire them out a little bit after that initial surge. They realize what's going on. And then by moving downstream to try to catch up to that fish, you kind of equal the playing field eventually and then try to quickly land them. But it's more of an aerobic workout than you'll have in late July on the same type of water.
I like that. I like that. That's very interesting, though.
So the other dynamic is the floating and drift boats, rafts have gotten a lot more popular now.
Okay.
And so I think the same kind of things apply in a drift boat. When you hook a fish and that fish gets downriver of you, don't put a ton of pressure on it. You know, kind of sustain that fish and then let the boat, if it can, let that boat drift below the fish and then start to put the pressure on the fish.
Yeah. And you need somebody who, you can communicate with on the oars, and maybe they'll help you out. If you got, you know, the fish of the trip right there, somebody who's good on the sticks is going to figure it out.
Good on the sticks.
Stick man.
So, hey guys, how about this? What's the fastest you've ever landed a big trout? What's the fastest? I put one in the net in 10 seconds, maybe one time. It was the 22nd biggest wild trout I've ever landed. I'm going to say she was in the net in 10 seconds. I got kind of lucky, saw my moment, like Trevor was saying earlier, and seriously, it was going for a brush pile. I cut it off. I put the net underneath. Its balance was off. I just kept lifting, and there, I had it.
I got a 26 and a half, so I threw out, stripped the streamer back. It mauled the streamer, and I missed it. I let the streamer swing. It circled around like a shark, hit the streamer again, set the hook.
That is fun.
And immediately it came up and barrel rolled, and I hauled ass, and it was probably like 20 seconds, 15 seconds, and just got the net under it right away. And
I think my fastest was probably at night, and that's partly because it's a 15-pound test, and I can really pull on it. Absolutely. But that was I mean, sub 20 seconds for sure. And and here's the reason is because Trevor and I were actually fishing together, as we often do at night. And we encountered other people, which we don't usually encounter. And and we decided, like, we're gonna stay quiet. We're going to keep lights off. We're going to, like, try to make our presence unknown. And I hooked into a fish in that amount of time. And I'm like, well, shoot, like, what are we going to do? Like, I can't, turn on the lights and take a good picture of this thing. So I got to get it in fast. So I mean, it really was just tug on it, get in, and it had to be 15 seconds or so.
Yeah.
Again, that's 15-pound test, you know.
But still, I learned a lot about fighting big fish by fighting them at night, and things do happen fast. Anybody else there?
Yeah, I landed my daytime namer in about 35 to 40 seconds probably. And again, just good opportunity. I waited. I felt my chance coming, and I took advantage of it, and I charged the last probably 10 to 15 feet to close the gap and got him as he turned over.
Yeah, because we fish around a lot of structure too, so you got to be careful that they don't, you know, go under something or, trap you. Just to give some perspective too, I'd like to ask this. Let's say 22-inch trout. What do you think is the average time that you get a 22-inch trout in the net? How many seconds? Minutes, seconds?
90 to 120 seconds in average. We're talking average.
You're going to ask me to do math. How many minutes is that?
1 to 2 minutes. Somewhere in that 1.5 to 2 minute mark.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm still going to say, I think sub minute.
I do too.
Sub minute. Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like an eternity. It probably feels like 5 minutes, but if you put the stopwatch on it, it's probably less than.
It's probably 50 seconds.
I don't know, 70 seconds or something.
Yeah. When you start getting forearm cramps, you know it's not under a minute.
Yeah, definitely. And it's probably been too long for the fish, too.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. I think, I've definitely had sub 30-second trout landed. I think also something that plays into that, those fish probably are more often than not on a streamer because, again, I have confidence in the power of my tools and I have the tendency to horse those fish faster than something on 4 or 5X tippet.
Right on.
If that plays into it.
Mm-hmm. Hey, anything else, guys?
So, guys, I got a question for you real quick. How many of you are knee-deep in a pool, right? You start fishing and you get that hook set and you feel that heaviness on your line where you're like, all right, your heart starts fluttering. You potentially got a whiskey. You start to set up with all the tactics we discussed on this podcast and you get into position. And after 20 seconds, you see the fish and you belly hooked a carp or a sucker or a whitefish.
I was wondering where this was going.
You've been fishing with sloop.
How do you get, do you guys have any advice on how to land those quickly? Because lately I've belly hooked a few whitefish that have caused me some issues when I land them.
Just snap it.
I horse them as hard as I can and try to get them above the current. And almost like just drag them across the top of the surface because the way their body's positioned underwater, it's impossible to fight them well.
Yeah. I mean, that's where the forearm cramps, right? I mean, I've gotten more forearm cramps.
You just got to lift them out, man, and slide them back to you.
All right. I guess I'm not doing anything wrong because that's what I try to do, but it's miserable.
When I moved to Central PA and the house we rented, one of our best streams was right behind my house. And I thought, I'm in heaven. The very next morning I went out and the first fish that I hooked was about an hour into fishing.
Oh no.
And I thought, oh my gosh, I got a big one. And I had belly hooked or foul hooked a sucker. Maybe it was in the back, whatever. I'd foul hooked the sucker.
Dorsal fin to sucker.
I don't remember how I brought him in though. Yep.
Yeah.
That was my first fish here, back here.
I have a good memory fishing with Dom when he's downstream at me yelling. Yelling for help because he's got this large trout.
No, I didn't need help. I was trying to brag.
Nah. You were in a disarray.
Oh no.
Tell him the
truth. I started running down to try to help my poor friend out. And by the time I got halfway there, he did land it. And then I just hear him yell back up. It's a sucker.
I waved you off. I'm going to be honest. He was probably like at least 75 yards up, right? You were pretty far away.
Yes, I was.
You were at the top of that island. And I'm like, hey, big trout. Because that's kind of why we were there.
Yeah, right.
And I thought, oh, I found one. Nope. But you were about 15 yards away. I just started waving you off. That's okay. Go ahead, back up where you were.
Yeah, nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here. I don't need your help either.
Yeah, sure.
I've done it with fall fish. I'm like, oh, you know, big fish. And it was a big fish, but it was like an 18-inch fall fish.
Did it count? Did it eat something on top?
Native, bro.
Native.
Freshwater tarpon.
All right, there it is. That's everything you need to know about fighting bigger trout. Not quite, but it is a good start. Again, the Trout Bitten website has a full category of articles about fighting fish and another about chasing big trout. I'll drop those links in the show notes, and you'll have a lot of homework for yourself if you want it. Thanks to my friends Austin, Trevor, Matt, Josh, and Bill for another great conversation. So, in truth, the only thing that really teaches is experience. And something electric happens when we hook into the fish of the day, the fish of the season, or maybe the fish of a lifetime. Our hearts beat faster. The adrenaline pumps because the stakes are raised. This is the fish we've been waiting for, and we don't want to lose the opportunity. And that feeling never fades. Across fishing styles and over the centuries, fishermen are captivated by these big fish moments. And while that feeling never gets old, our ability to control our response and control the fish using the right moves with the rod, the reel, and the line improve. With each loss, we learn the hard way. With each story about the one that got away, we replay our mistakes and plan to avoid the same errors next time. And as we wait, as we hunt for the next big trout, we practice these moves on the average trout. We form good habits for line recovery, for slack management, side pressure, optimal fighting angles, and the all-important closing moves of the last 10 feet. So, as much as we focus on the intricacies of fly selection, casting technique, and drift speed, often what we remember most is the moment when the biggest trout we've ever seen makes it to our net. It's that conclusion, that happy ending, that provides the capstone to so much of our journey. Fighting bigger fish is an equal parts mix of preparation, instinct, and luck. And at least a third of that formula, we're in control of. Trevor, will you read us out?
Remember, Troutbitten.com is a free resource for all anglers. With over 800 articles, there are stories, commentaries, tactics, tips, and more. Find what you like through the top menu and through the search page. Navigate by way of the categories and tags, too. Thank you for listening to the Trout Bitten Podcast. Please give the show a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and leave a comment, because that really helps. Until next time, friends, fish hard, enjoy the day, and find your life on the water.
It's a sucker. Come on, Dom.
Danny.
Good on the sticks.
Good on the sticks, baby.